content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer and the Triangle Business Journal. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And we'll begin with, as cashless stores grow, so does the backlash. Hamburg Figueroa just wanted a taco, so he was surprised to learn the dollar bills in his pocket were no good at Dos Toros Taquera in Manhattan. One of the small but growing number of establishments across the U.S. where customers can only pay by card or smartphone. Cash-free stores are generating a backlash among some activists and liberal-leaning policymakers who say the practice discriminates against people like Figueroa, who either lack bank accounts or rely on cash for many transactions. Figueroa is an iron worker and had to stand to the side, holding his taco until a sympathetic cashier helped him find another customer willing to pay for his meal with a card in exchange for cash. "I had money and I couldn't pay," he said. The issue got some high-profile attention this week when a retail giant, Amazon, bowed to pressure from activists and agreed to accept cash at more than 30 cashless stores, including its Amazon Go convenience stores, which have no cashiers, and its bookshops. Amazon declined to say when the change would happen. There is no federal law that requires stores to accept cash, so lawmakers are working on the issue at the state and city level. Earlier this year, Philadelphia became the first city to ban cashless stores, despite efforts by Amazon to dissuade it. New Jersey passed a statewide ban soon after, and a similar ban is working its way through the New York City Council. Before this year, there was only one jurisdiction that required businesses to accept cash, Massachusetts, which passed a law nearly 40 years ago. The potential societal cost of a cashless economy, I think, outweighs the potential benefits for businesses, said Richie Torres, a New York City councilman for the South Bronx, who introduced the bill. Policymakers argue that while cashless enterprises aren't widespread now, the practice could expand to more services, including some that cater to lower-income people. Walmart-owned Sam's Club opened its first cashierless store in Dallas last year, using technology that allows customers to scan and pay for items with their smartphones. Kroger has installed similar technology in about 400 stores nationwide. Stadiums in Tampa Bay, Florida, and Atlanta have started to go cashless or nearly cashless, and the Barclays Center, where the Brooklyn Nets play, is now effectively cashless as well. Advocates for cashless bans worry technology is moving too fast for the 6.5% of American households, 8.4 million who do not have a bank account, according to the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Figueroa is among the much larger group considered underbanked, meaning they have a primary bank account but regularly rely on alternative financial services like check cashers. More than 24 million U.S. households are underbanked, according to the FDIC. The issue disproportionately affects African American and Hispanic communities. About 17% of African Americans and 14% of Hispanic households have no bank accounts, compared to just 3% of white households, according to the FDIC. Figueroa is an immigrant from the Dominican Republic, only opened a credit union account 2 years ago. It took another year to build up enough funds to use his debit card regularly. He still occasionally relies on a check cashier if he needs money quickly, and much of his income comes in cash from his weekend job as a busboy. He has no credit card and no apps on his phone and has only the opted online three times. Business owners who go cashless say they are following the lead of the majority of customers who are abandoning cash payments. Retailers are under pressure to cater to customers with heightened expectations for a fast and seamless service driven by companies like Amazon, Uber, and Grubhub. Leo Kremer, co-owner of Dos Toros, says the volume of cash transactions at his store fell from 50%, from about 50% a decade ago to 15% last year. That made the cost and logistics of handling cash especially onerous. Before going cashless, Dos Toros locations were robbed twice. Still, Kremer said the company would adjust if legally required to accept cash. There are no bad guys on this issue. Everyone is trying to do the right thing and make sure there are no unintended consequences, he said. Critics say banning cash-free stores is an overreaction. There are no overall estimates on how many U.S. stores have gone cashless, but it remains a rarity. In New York City, the trend appears to be gaining traction mostly with fast casual dining establishments like Dos Toros. Far more common are stores that require a minimum purchase for non-cash payments. To call this a trend is a bit of an exaggeration, said J. Craig Shearman, a spokesman for the National Retail Federation in Washington. It's not something the average customer would expect to see at every store at the mall anytime soon. In testimony to a New York City Council committee, Kremer argued that businesses that consistently serve the unbanked and underbanked population aren't going to go cashless. It wouldn't make sense for them. But financial experts who work with low-income people cautioned against making an assumption about the shopping preferences or buying power of those who rely on cash. I'm uncomfortable with the idea that certain people don't shop here, so it's fine to exclude them, said Justine Zinkin, CEO of Neighborhood Trust Financial Partners, a financial counseling nonprofit affiliated with the credit union where Figueroa banks. Next, Hollywood writers will fire agents. An effort by writers and their agents to resolve a dispute over industry practices collapsed Friday night as the Writers Guild of America said it had not reached a settlement to end the standoff that has kept Hollywood on edge. The WGA said that the agencies haven't provided them with a fair offer and that its members would move forward with plans to fire their agents, an unprecedented step that the union has been threatening in the weeks leading up to Friday's deadline. We know that together we are about to enter uncharted waters, WGA leaders said in an email to members. Life that deviates from the current system might be various degrees of disorienting, but it has become clear that a big change is necessary. David Goodman, who has been leading the negotiations for the Guild, said in a separate memo late Friday that despite the deadline extension agreed to last week, it is clear to us that we are not appreciably closer. The talent agency said in a separate statement that the writers rejected their latest offer, which was presented Wednesday and included a concession about profit sharing. Unfortunately, not to our surprise, the WGA did not accept our offer, did not provide counter proposals, and refused to negotiate further. We're prepared to continue to fight for the best interest of writers and all artists, said Karen Stewart, the executive director of the Association of Talent Agents, the organization that represents the agencies. The negotiations have kept the entertainment industry in a state of suspense during the last months as the two sides fought it out over packaging fees and the agency's encroachment into TV and film production. The mass firing of agents could disrupt the flow of projects during a record period of TV production, since agents function like market makers by bringing together clients and potential buyers of their scripts. A protracted dispute could affect the pipeline of new TV shows. Writers and agents had until midnight Friday to strike a deal on a new code of conduct for agencies. It replaces a 43-year-old agreement and ends long-standing industry practices that the union believes benefit agents at the expense of writers. And now from the Triangle Business Journal, Mebane Tattoo Shop gets some unexpected guests. Biz loves it when things just come together, and that's how a small tattoo shop in Mebane inked some of the biggest stars in college basketball. Karen McHugh, owner of Cardinal Skin Art and Gallery, calls it serendipitous the way the shop came to tattoo UNC Chapel Hill standouts Kobe White, Nasir Little, Leaky Black, and Garrison Brooks. McHugh tells Biz he and his fiancée, Celeste, were on the way home from vacation the day after the Tar Heels lost in the NCAA tournament and decided to take in a flick in Chapel Hill. As the couple was grabbing some popcorn, they spotted White, then realized Little and Black were also there. Being huge UNC fans, they made an introduction and found out the three had been scouring Instagram for a tattoo artist to offer more than the studios in town. Bingo, the next day White and Black were in McHugh's Mebane shop. The day after, Little came in to get his tattoo. Brooks came in a day later. It has been an overwhelmingly positive experience, McHugh said. It has been our pleasure working with them and getting to know them a little better. Report gives Raleigh and Charlotte high marks for solar. Raleigh and Charlotte were just named among the top U.S. cities for solar energy in a new report by Environmental North Carolina Research Policy Center. The study puts Charlotte at 27th and Raleigh at 33rd when it comes to total solar energy capacity. In terms of megawatts of solar energy capacity per capacity, Raleigh ranked at 37, topping Charlotte, which came in 41st. Leading the list was Honolulu, with three cities on the West Coast, San Diego, number 2, San Jose, number 3, and Las Vegas, number 5. Also near the top, ranking at number 4, was Burlington, Vermont. The hurricanes are on the list, but at least the misery is over for the year. So, ESPN has updated its Sports Misery Index. Before you ask, it's a ranking index of the most miserable fan base in sports, and one Triangle team is on the list. The misery formula includes several factors such as championships, playoffs, berths, playoff wins, heartbreaks, and rival comparison. The higher the number, the more misery exists. Here's a hint. Fans of the NBA Sacramento Kings, 27.1 points, the MLB San Diego Padres, 25.5, and the NFL's Buffalo Bills at 25.24 are the three most miserable in the country, said ESPN. And one local team is among the 20 most miserable, coming in at, well, number 20. With a 16.65 index score, the Carolina Hurricanes Hurricanes fan base is still reeling from years without a playoff appearance. But there is good news. With a return to the playoffs this year, the folks at ESPN are optimistic the Triangle's only professional sports team will drop off the misery index completely come fall. Oh, and the Charlotte Hornets were number 17 on the list with a misery index of 16.95. And next, Raleigh Project takes off despite federal charges against the investors. As federal officials build their money laundering case against a Russian couple in Raleigh, a real estate project they funnel cash into is moving forward. Leonid and Titania Teff were indicted last year following the FBI raid on their North Ridge home. Leonid Teff was accused of orchestrating a two-year kickback scheme, funneling money from Russia military defense contracts, and skimming more than $150 million. In the meantime, court documents show one of their real estate investments may be preparing to take off, the Windcrest subdivision in North Raleigh. A judge recently finalized an order requiring the federal government to return more than $760,000 that had been seized so that an entity known as Lank Ventures could complete the project. The Teffs could not be reached for comment. Their attorney, Benjamin Layton of Moore and Van Allen, didn't return an inquiry to comment. The project is one of multiple recent investments that the Teffs made in the Triangle with a company called Blue Sky Services. In addition to buying a two-story historic building on E. Hargett Street last year, the Teffs partnered with Blue Sky on the Windcrest subdivision. The Blue Sky website describes it as a $15.3 million project with 17 luxury estate homes. It's reaching a critical phase for investors as court documents show Lank has identified more than one potential buyer represented by Jim Allen Group. Blue Sky executives wouldn't answer questions about the project April 9th, but Nikita Zitoff, broker in charge, did email a statement touting the project's success. The Windcrest subdivision project is progressing as planned, he states. We are in the last phases of the project, and we anticipate completing development of the subdivision and preparing for the sale of the lots in approximately 30 days. And next, new bus hub sought for Raleigh. Transit leaders have a bold vision for what they're calling the Raleigh Union Station Bus Facility, a transformative mixed-use project planned for the Warehouse District. Weeks after rallying developers with a 39-page request for qualifications, Regional Transit Agency Go Triangle has heard back from seven companies interested in developing the site, Go Triangle General Manager Jeff Mann says. Mann envisions a world-class multimodal campus that further connects Union Station to the region, accommodating multiple transit options from the buses and trains currently serving Raleigh to future rail lines and bus rapid transit. It will improve the quality of life by improving mobility, he said. And as stated in the RFQ, the site represents a prime development opportunity for the right company. The optimal development partner is an experienced team that can successfully deliver a mixed-use development program that is vertically integrated with a new bus terminal on the RUS bus site, the RFQ notes. And the developer will have help as Go Triangle was recently awarded a $20 million U.S. Department of Transportation grant to support the facility's development. The scope and the price tag of the project is unknown. While Go Triangle has begun engineering and design work, the winning developer will craft much of the plans for the space. Mann won't say who those potential partners are. Mike Munn, CEO of McAdams, predicts a blend of companies being involved, from local firms, other developers intrigued by the region, and the growth of the region. The transit element is unlike anything most Triangle real estate developers have encountered. For that reason, he said he wouldn't be surprised to see a joint venture emerge, a combination of local players and outside developers. Next, the Port of Wilmington gets new crane as part of upgrades. North Carolina Port's third Neo-Panamax crane, part of a $33.8 million purchase, just arrived at the Port of Wilmington. The cranes add up to a fraction of a $200 million capital improvement plan, which also include construction of a wider turning basin, berth enhancements, and a container terminal overhaul. Joan Molesky, who heads the Department of Maritime Administration at Texas A&M University in Galveston, Texas, says investments in cranes are all about throughput. The faster you can unload a ship and get the cargo out to the hinterlands outside the port, the shipping companies look at that and say, great, if you can do that faster, better, cheaper, then I'm more likely to come to your port, she explains. She says equipment investments like this one are only worth the investment if a port has the consistent, sufficient volume to justify that level of automation. The North Carolina Ports Authority has not responded to multiple requests for comment on its operations, and in a news release, the authority predicts the renovations will double the port's annual throughput capacity to 1.2 million TEUs, or 20-foot equivalent units. And next, NC State claims breakthrough in AI research. New research out of NC State University claims to improve AI learning speeds by as much as 60%, presenting massive opportunities in the AI industry and for the researchers planning to commercialize it. On April 11th, researchers at NC State presented the findings of a groundbreaking technique that reduces training time for deep learning networks, a tantalizing possibility for technologies such as face recognition or self-driving cars that need to sift through endless amounts of data. Zaping Shin, a professor of computer science at NC State and co-author of a paper on the work, says the ramifications of the method are massive and could greatly accelerate development in the AI industry. One of the biggest challenges facing the development of new AI tools is the amount of time and computing power it takes to train deep learning networks to identify and respond to the data patterns that are relevant to their applications, he says. We've come up with a way to expedite that process, which we call adaptive deep reuse. We have demonstrated that it can reduce training times by up to 69% without accuracy loss. Shin says they are still working with the university's technology transfer office to secure the intellectual property rights, but are looking to commercialize it after receiving interest from the industry. He says they do not know whether they plan to just license the concept to companies or whether they plan to launch a spin-out company of their own. The method works by teaching the AI to identify patterns in sets of data that it is analyzing. Instead of repeatedly analyzing millions and millions of bits of data, the network can apply filters to one chunk of data and apply the results to similar data sets, saving time and computing power. The researchers tested their technique using three deep learning networks and data sets that are widely used as test beds by deep learning researchers. CypherNet using Cypher 10, AlexNet using ImageNet, and VGG19 using ImageNet. The technique cut training time for AlexNet by 69%, for VGG19 by 68%, and for CypherNet by 63%, all without accuracy loss. This technology is directly deployable in the current framework, Shin said, so it's ready to be used in the industry that needs AI solutions. And next, Tavern arrives. Tyler's Tap Room bids adieu in Durham. Charlotte-based Hickory Tavern, an ESPN two-time finalist for Best Sports Bar in North America, will open its 28th restaurant in Morrisville this May. In preparation for the grand opening, the Tavern is looking to bring approximately 100 new jobs to the Morrisville area. We're looking to hire fun, caring, and driven teams. Members with a hospitality mindset to join our Hickory Tavern family, said General Manager Mark Kawasmi. Longtime American Tobacco Campus restaurant Tyler's Tap Room will close its doors for good on April 19th. Its 14-year run at American Tobacco will leave a huge hole in the history of the Bull City, but work is underway to find other options to fill the space. ATC has now hired CBRE to help lead a strategy designed to bring a new restaurant to the location. American Tobacco Campus is a rare, truly authentic mixed-use project that launched the transformation of downtown Durham, said Charlie Coyne, Senior Vice President and Director of CBRE. We're very fortunate to join this team at a pivotal point in its future. The partnership with CBRE comes as the campus plans its largest ever expansion at the University Ford Kia location next door. Applications are now being accepted for the North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association's Chef of the Year, Pastry Chef of the Year, and Mixologist and Distillery of the Year titles. The event, which will take place on September 30th at Angus Barnes Bay 7 in Durham, will have competitors battle in private, preliminary, and regional events prior to the finals. Preliminary rounds will be held in New Bern, May 5th, Asheville, June 3rd, and Charlotte, June 24th, Greensboro, July 8th, and Chapel Hill, July 22nd. Regional rounds leading up to the finals will take place in Raleigh, August 12th, Charlotte, August 19th, and Wilmington, August 26th. All competitors will be judged on the presentation and taste of each of their dishes. And new homes are on the way between Durham and Chapel Hill. More homes are coming in the busy part of the triangle between Durham and Chapel Hill. Crescent Overlook, which will feature more than 80 single-family homes on quarter-acre lots, has opened for sales at 3614 Garrett Road in Durham. The location is west of town and just north of 15501. The development is 7 miles from UNC Chapel Hill and 5 miles to the Duke University Medical Center. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.